The new book, Where the Heartbeat, tells the story of John Cage, who began a spiritual quest to know himself better. His earnest inquiry touched thousands of lives and created controversies that are ongoing. He devised unique concerts consisting of notes chosen by chance, randomly tuned radios, and silence, in the service of his absolute conviction that art and life are one inseparable truth, a seamless web of creation divided only by these illusory thoughts. What empowered John Cage to compose his incredible music, and what allowed him to inspire tremendous transformations in the lives of his fellow artists, was Cage's improbable conversion to Zen Buddhism. The new book, Where the Heart Beats, is the first book to address the importance of Zen Buddhism to John Cage's life and to the artistic avant-garde of the 1950s and 1960s. Kay Larson, an acclaimed art critic, columnist, and editor who served as an associate editor at Art News and an art critic for The Village Voice, also was the art critic for New York Magazine for 14 years, has authored the book, and she joins us on the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Joe, I'm delighted to be here.
I can't thank you enough. I told the story earlier this morning that you came up to me during the Woodstock Writers Festival and told me about this project and gave me a galley. And it took me a couple of weeks, and I got to it. And it is just phenomenal. I was not aware of John Cage's work and the controversies of it. So I found that part fascinating. But then when you start getting into the inspiration and the subtitle, which I mentioned this morning, that inner life of artists is really a fascinating take on the story of what is of what propels us to do what we do artistically. Give us a sense of how you came to the subject, because you came to it not only as an art critic and as a commentator, but also through your own conversion to Zen Buddhism.
You know, I bought John Cage's book Silence, which was published in 1961. I bought it in 1969 when I graduated from college, and I kept it around for several decades as I moved from place to place. And I remember reading it and thinking that there was an underlying code that I didn't quite understand. The words sort of made sense, and yet they sort of didn't. And then in 1994, I started practicing Zen Buddhism myself, actually up here at Zen Mountain Monastery in Mount Tremper. And all of a sudden, everything that Cage said made sense. And I said, ah, this is what I've been missing in his work and his life.
Did you go back to Silence? Did you
read it again? I went back to Silence, and I read it again, and I said, he was a really profound Buddhist. And by Buddhist, I mean that I don't mean, I have to make it very clear that that doesn't mean subscribing to a system of beliefs. Buddhism is really about experiences. It's all that counts is your own experience, you know, your own search for truth, your own answers, what your own mind and your own heart tell you. That's what it's really about. It's not about accepting some creed. So I went through that process myself, and then I looked at the process that I'd been going through, and I said, John Cage went through that process too. And that's what got me interested.
Excuse me, and that's where the art critic part of you comes in, because that really is what drives the book, is your curiosity and interest in how those two rectified themselves.
You know, when I was an art critic, I still am an art critic, but I've been an art critic since, oh, I don't know, 40 years now. I was always looking at the art, and I recognize now that I was looking through it to see what the great questions were and how the art addressed the great questions. And then I got involved in this book, and I saw Cage looking to see at those same great questions. I got to see his responses unfolding. Is it okay if I just read one short quote by him?
Oh, goodness, yes.
This is the classic Cage quote that sort of defines his whole project. He said, "Our intention is to affirm this life, not to bring order out of chaos, nor to suggest improvements in creation, but simply to wake up to the very life we're living, which is so excellent once one gets one's mind and one's desires out of this way and lets it act of its own accord." That is a huge statement, I mean, every part of it, getting your desires out of the way, getting your suffering, your attachment, your stuck places out of the way,
right.
and letting life happen of its own accord, and you recognize your part in it, and that's part of the process.
What do you think there was about him and about the controversies that he saw in regards to his work in which he did not formally address this and say that it, in many ways my music is a way to answer some of these spiritual questions?
That's a great question, because if he had told us what he was doing, then we would only have his explanations. And he would have generated a, I like this, I don't like this response in us. Instead, what he said was, and this is as direct a quote as I can make it, what can be analyzed or criticized in my work are the questions that I ask.
Mm.
So to find out what his work is, I found myself having to ask those same questions and find out what his answers were. And so this book is structured in an unusual way for a biography. It starts out with those questions, and then it tracks Cage as he finds the answers. And so we only know as much as Cage knows at that moment, although there are these foreshadowings, you know, because that's also appropriate because he felt that himself. He had the sense that he was going somewhere. And I don't know about you, but I've had that feeling in my life, too, every now and then. It's sort of like water that rises from some subterranean place, and you say, oh, that's where I belong.
Hmm.
I mean, that's how I ended up as a writer. I was an artist. And at one point I said, you know, actually I'm a writer. And that's when that water was rising and it told me something about myself. And Cage had this feeling from the 1930s that he was going to be in a partnership with a choreographer. And he was going to be doing his own music, and the choreographer was going to be doing his own dance, and the two of them would be working together, and that would change everything. Well, of course, that's exactly what happened. He met Merce Cunningham in 1938, and then he had to get himself to New York, and which he finally managed to do in 1942, and they did start working together, and then all hell broke loose, because Cage had to face the fact that he was actually falling in love with Cunningham. And it shattered his world. It raised all these questions he had about himself. Who am I? You know, that this is the course of my life. And he started in what is a classic entry point into Buddhism. He started with the recognition that he was suffering for some reason, and that his suffering was tearing himself apart. And he took, through the 1940s, he took various paths trying to solve that question. That's how he discovered silence.
Mm-hmm.
That's why silence was so important to him, because it's the silence of quieting the mind and getting yourself out of the way. That's why it's so important to him. And then in 1950, D.T. Suzuki, this major, major teacher of Zen Buddhism, showed up in New York City, and Cage began to hear lectures from Suzuki about what that suffering mind really is. It's like the surface of our consciousness in a way, and it's the part of the mind that says, oh, you know, I really need to go to the store today, and it starts to feed you ideas and thoughts and so on, where you get stuck. I mean, you get stuck in those, and they torture you, or they can torture you, and it's getting unstuck and seeing that great wisdom that you already have deep within you. It's the water rising, you know.
Mm.
You see that wisdom, you feel that wisdom in yourself, and that's the path.
You certainly see these moments where there was clarity for him, but it seems in the end he was still tortured.
Oh, no. On the contrary, from the 1950s on, there was this amazing transformation in Cage. He was tortured less and less as time went on through the 40s. But when Suzuki showed up, and basically Suzuki said to Cage, you're okay the way you are.
Mm.
You're already perfect and complete. You don't need anything more. Just live your life, and that's fine.
But I sort of read it that it had an effect on him. I mean, that it sort of guided his life from there on, of not wanting to go back to that.
It guided his life in the sense that, in realizing he was just fine the way he was. He conveyed that message to all kinds of other people. And the great smile that John Cage is famous for started happening in his life at that point. He started not only smiling, but he started opening his heart to other people. Because when you get your own suffering out of the way, you find that you're just more open. Your heart is more open to everything, to experiences, to other people, to life, you know. So he, because of that opening that Cage found for himself, he was vastly influential. I mean, everybody who came in contact with him felt that there was some kind of electric charge between him and them.
And that smile on his face was also resonant and apparent in his work.
Yes, it was, because gradually he found ways to open his work to ordinary life and to the world as it is and to sounds as they are, and he found great peace there, peace and happiness. And all of his work from that point on is one form or another of that realization. And in doing that for himself, and saying ordinary life is just fine as it is, he influenced all these artists, you know, beginning with Robert Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns, and then on up through the whole pantheon of the postmodern, and also musicians. There's a book called Experimental Music, John Cage and Beyond, where John Cage is the beginning and the beyond is everybody else. And that all came through his experience with Zen, and then he went out the other side and he rejoined ordinary life, so to speak. And that's his transformation.
And his relationship with Merce Cunningham? What impact did that have on it?
Actually, the first thing that Cage did was to show Cunningham how to do movement that was just ordinary movement. In other words, it didn't have any narrative or drama connected with it. It wasn't emotional like we tend to think of dance, you know. But Cunningham himself became a powerhouse. In a way, he's more famous now than John Cage, even though Cage started Cunningham on his path. And this is in the book, by the way. But the two of them actually did work according together and separately and together. Cage would write music, Cunningham would make his dances, and then they'd come together to perform them. And that was true for the rest of both their lives.
And Cunningham's relationship with Buddhism?
Cunningham, I've heard him on panels being very respectful of Buddhism, but he didn't seem to have the kind of driving necessity that Cage felt.
Because he seemed to feed off of it through Cage,
exactly.
But did not enact it himself.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
He used
it more as a muse than anything else.
A muse and also a way of closeness to Cage, because they shared information constantly, of course. And so I've got quotes from Cage that show up in Cunningham's ideas about dance. But it was a true partnership in that way.
What do you hope ultimately, I mean, what's so fascinating about this book is this connection to Zen Buddhism, which really has not been written before about John Cage. So
that's
ultimately,
right.
What do you hope people get out of this story?
I hope that they understand that this is not just some esoteric issue on the sideline, but the question of how you really return to your own life and to see its beauty and its mystery and to open yourself to all experiences and to other people, that this is really what else is the purpose of this life, you know? And it's a transformation that can happen to anybody who really takes it on as a project. It's open to anybody. That's what I hope people get out of this.
If not this, what?
If not this, what? Exactly.
The name of the book is Where the Heart Beats, John Cage, Zen Buddhism and the Inner Life of Artists. It's a beautifully written book. It's published by Penguin Press. Kay Larson will be talking about and signing her new book Saturday night at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck at 7:30. You can go to oblongbooks.com for more information. Again, this Saturday night, 7:30 at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com, Where the Heart Beats, published by the Penguin Press. Kay Larson, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us and for sharing with us this morning.
Joe, I've been really glad to be here.
Thank you so much. A great pleasure. Again, find out more about the event, oblongbooks.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.